Page 338, Bigotry Among Buddhists. Following the Third Buddhist Council, there appeared Katavatthu, an Abhidhamma book, which records the teaching of Mahamoggaliputta. This book gives an account of different beliefs. Some of these beliefs concern practice, and as such they form a barrier to the spiritual progress of the person who hold them firmly. The belief in the ego is a case in point. Today, some people believe that it is not necessary to contemplate the psychophysical phenomena that arise from six senses and realize their anicca, dukkha and anatta. Some say that mere knowledge of the Four Noble Truths means the realization of their truth. Some hold that mere contemplation of Nibbana ensures special insight. Some believe that concentration by itself can make a man attain the path and its fruition, although he may not realize the arising and passing away of Nama Rupa and their three chief marks. If these beliefs are so deep-rooted that one cannot renounce them, they give rise to bigotry. Some insist that nowadays it is impossible to attain vipassana insight, in spite of all the efforts to practice meditation. These skeptics do not practice, and so they never attain the path. Some hold that it would be in vain to meditate without first overcoming the ego belief. We do not accept this view, for although Burmese Buddhists who wish to meditate may not be wholly free from the ego belief, they accept the teaching that existence means only nama rupa, that it is subject to anicca, to dukkha and anatta. They show no sign of bigotry that may hamper their spiritual effort. When in the course of meditation they realize the distinction between nama and rupa, the common ego belief is done away with the emergence of vipassana insight. They realize the insubstantiality of life more deeply, till at last they get rid of the ego illusion through the Aryan path knowledge. Bhikkhu sati and ego belief. If the ego belief is so deep-rooted that you cannot overcome it, it may endanger your spiritual life, as in the case of Bhikkhu sati. In the lifetime of the Buddha, a monk named Sati studied the Jatakas and concluded that consciousness was the ego or atta. He came to this conclusion on the basis of the identification of the main character in the stories with the Buddha. Thus King Mahajanaka became the Buddha, and so did the Naga king Buridatta, the elephant king Sadana, and King Vaisantara. Certainly the physical body of Mahajanaka, or any other bodhisatta, did not pass on to the life of the Buddha, nor did his feelings, perceptions, and karma formations, sankhara, in his previous lives. It is only the consciousness of Mahajanaka, etc., that became the consciousness of Bodhisatta, Prince Siddhartha. That consciousness is embodied in the present Buddha. Reasoning in this way, he concluded that it was consciousness that wandered from one life to another without being subject to destruction. Sati's view is mentioned in Mahatanha Sankhaya Sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya as follows. The consciousness, vijnana, which existed in the previous lives, passes on from one life to another. The present consciousness is no other than the consciousness of previous lives. Thus I understand the Lord's teaching. So Bhikkhu Sati identified consciousness with the ego and believed in its immortality. Other bhikkhus told him that was not what the Buddha taught, that an individual's mental process is only a stream of consciousness with the new units constantly replacing the old, that as the process was continuous, King Mahajanaka was identified with the Buddha, and that consciousness being impermanent, it was not the old consciousness that came into existence. But Sati did not give up his view. He stuck to it as the true teaching of the Buddha. Then, as they could not bring him to his senses, they reported to the Buddha. So the Buddha summoned Sati and questioned him. Sati stated his view, and the Buddha asked him about his concept of consciousness. Sati replied, "Lord, there is Atta, or ego entity, which speaks and feels. This ego fares well or ill in the course of its existence, according to its good or bad karma. I identify that ego with consciousness." Then the Buddha said, "You fool, when did I ever teach anyone like that? Haven't I told you in many ways about the consciousness that arises from causes? Haven't I said that no consciousness arises without a cause? You have misunderstood my teaching and laid me open to charges by others. You have destroyed yourself. Your mistaken view will be detrimental to your interests for a long time." Then the Buddha asked the bhikkhus whether Sati was likely to attain any spiritual insight. The bhikkhus answered, "No, Lord." The Buddha then stressed the conditionality of consciousness with examples. The fire that starts with timber is called timber fire. That starts with bamboo is called bamboo fire. That starts with grass is called grass fire. Similarly, the consciousness is conditioned by the eye and visual form is called chakku vijnana, eye consciousness. That conditioned by the ear and the sound, sota vijnana, ear consciousness, etc. Thus the Buddha explained how each unit of consciousness is distinct and separate in itself and how it passes away and is replaced by a new one. But Sati did not give up his ego belief and he missed the holy path because of his bigotry. Bhikkhu Arita, a person may be overly attached not only to the ego belief but to other beliefs as well. In the time of the Buddha there was a bhikkhu called Arita. He was not an ignorant monk like Sati. On the contrary, he was well informed, and because of his wide knowledge he was inclined to criticize the Buddha's teaching. He argued thus, "The Buddha's lay followers lead a married life. They do not avoid sensual pleasures, but they occasionally hear the Dhamma, ponder and practice it, and some attain one of the first three stages of the path. Likewise, bhikkhus can enjoy the pleasant colour of their robes, hear pleasant voices, eat good food, etc. If they can thus enjoy the five sense objects, there is no reason why they should not indulge in the pleasure of a woman's beauty, her voice, her smell, and so forth. In the final analysis, a woman's visual form does not differ from that of a robe, nor is the sense of physical contact with a woman essentially different from the sense of touch afforded by bed or clothing." Reasoning in this way, he insisted that it was proper for a bhikkhu to have sexual pleasure. To put it another way, he challenged the Vinaya rules to the point of declaring that there is nothing to justify the excommunication of a bhikkhu who had sexual intercourse with a woman. Arita's argument was somewhat like that of some modern philosophers who say that it is as proper to drink alcohol as it is to drink water, since they are both made up of the same physical element, apo dhatu. It is like the argument of those who insist that one who is fully aware of the reality of elements and free from attachment to conventions and concepts should have no more qualms about killing a fowl than about cutting a gourd, inasmuch as both are made up of the same physical elements. Such sophistry is indeed terrifying. It results from an excess of independent thinking, and those who rely on such teachers are in for moral disaster. Other bhikkhus remonstrated with Arita, but it was in vain. Arita held fast to his view, and so they reported to the Buddha. The Buddha summoned Arita and said, "When did I teach anyone like that? Haven't I said that any sexual act by a bhikkhu is a hindrance on the holy path, that all sensual pleasures tend to do more harm than good, and that they are like a meat bone being gnawed by a dog, or a piece of meat that is a bone of contention among the birds? Yet you misunderstand my teaching and have discredited us in the eyes of the public. Further, you have uprooted and made yourself devoid of all support. But notwithstanding the Buddha's repudiation of his view, Arita stuck to it and did not make any spiritual progress because of his bigotry.